Boker Tov, and welcome back to our ongoing series of Shiurim and Daf Yomi. We are now on Da'an Yevamot, Daf Tzadi Amud Bet, continuing to analyze the first and second Mishnayot of the 10th Perek of Yevamot, which were grouped together at the beginning of the Perek, and we will complete that analysis, Amir Tzashem, in this podcast. Right in the middle of the Amud, we have a break of Lo Zevezem Etamin La. We notice that both the first husband and the second husband, in the case in our Mishnah, if they are Kohanim, do not participate in her burial and thus become Tamei Minalan. Dichtiv, and the one Pasuk on the page is really two Pasukim, Pasuk Bet and Pasuk Dalet of the beginning of Parshat Emor. Kiim l'shero akarov elav, that a man, a Kohen, is not allowed to become Tamei except for, and it lists the relatives, and the first one is she'ero akarov elav. V'amamar she'ero zu ishto, that is a reference to his wife. Uchtiv, and then after listing all of the blood relatives, it says, lo yitama ba'al ba'amav, that a master or a husband should not become tamei with his own people, lehechalo, to become chulin. So what does that mean? Yesh baal shem mitamei, v'yesh baal shem mitamei, meaning sometimes a husband is mitamei, sometimes he's not. Haketzad, mitamei hu liishto ksheru, v'ainu mitamei liishto psula. So he is mitamei only for his wife that he's allowed to be married to. So for instance, if a kohen marries a grusha and she dies, he is not mitamei la. Similarly, in this case, because this is a wife that he has to divorce, either that or she's somebody who's not really his wife. In the case of the second husband, he is not mitamei la. Good. And by the way, all of these questions really are only about the issues really are only about the first husband, who really is a husband. The second husband certainly would not have a ketubah, and she would not have any claim of perot, and he would not have any claim on her mitziah, and there would be no reason for him to be mitamei for her, etc. So the reason is as follows. Why did Chazal establish in Masachik Ketubot that when a woman finds and then goes to her husband, it's a machloket in the Gemara, what the reasons are, which is lined up with which. Mizonot and Ketubah and Mitziah and Masei Yadayim and how they match up. But the mainstream approach is that the reason that we say Mitziah comes to the husband is we don't want to have enmity in the house, and so in she's being supported by the household, and therefore if she finds something, it goes to the household. Here we don't mind if there's enmity. The opposite, we'd rather create enmity so that they will have no reason to stay together, because we do want them to divorce. Because why normally did the rabbis establish, and this is all the rabbanon, that the masei yadayim of the wife go to her husband? Mishum dekachal mazoni, because it's sort of in recompense for the fact that she is fed by the household, which may be d'oraita. That's machloket. Hacha came into mazoni late la masei yadayah lav didei. Since she's not getting fed, so now her masei yadayim don't go to the husband either. Neither husband is mefer nedarim. Tamimayim rachmanam bal mefer. This is interesting, because now we're not dealing with a rabbinic law, but a law that's da'oraita, and this is somewhat in the spirit of Rabbi Shimon, the Dorish time of the Kra. But this is a tam that is not in the Torah. And that is, why did the Torah say that a husband can repudiate his wife's nedarim, so that she shouldn't become disgusting to him? So if a wife takes a neder that she won't wear makeup, or that she won't bathe, or whatever it is, he has the chance to repudiate it. Here we don't have an interest in her remaining pleasant to him. Here, if she takes a neder that's going to make her unpleasant to him, so that's good. That'll engender what we want to create here. Good. Hatam Bat Yisrael Nifsalam in Akuhuna, and the rest of the Piska goes through about Levi and about Cohen, and says that she is invalidated from those things. So Pshita, it's obvious that after all, there's a woman who's had adultery, so therefore, as a Bat Cohen, she's a Zona, so therefore she's Psalam in Akuhuna, and as a Bat Cohen, as a Bat Levi, she's passed off from the special things she can eat. Of course, Maser only within the context of her mayor. But Levi and a Maser Tzrichalei, that actually was something we did not know, that a Bat Levi becomes invalidated from eating Maser if she has a Biyadznut. Bat Levi mina Maser mimi still Biyadznut, but wait a second, since when is that the case? Fatanya Levi Ashenishbet Oshenivala Biyadznut no nima Maser Rochelet. And this, of course, must be according to her mayor, because according to the Chachamim, there's no Chiddush to say that she gets maaser. So that means that a Leviya, who was a Bat Levi, who was taken captive, or in some other way by those who would have sex with her, or in other some other way, she had biatznut, she continues to eat maaser. So Rav Sheshet Krasa, the answer is that in this case, where she wasn't captured, but she of her own free will married the second guy, and obviously did not check well enough because her husband was alive, then it's a knas that she loses maaser. Good. Bat koin mina truma. That's right. Bat koin cannot eat truma. Afilu b'truma d'rabbanan. To say that she can't eat truma d'oraita, certainly. But here, even things that are truma d'rabbanan, like truma b'zman hazeh, according to many, and trumat yerek, etc., which is always d'rabbanan, she may not eat. Now, this is difficult because we said earlier on in the Mishnah, in the piece we analyzed in the previous podcast, that she has no ktubah. And then we said that neither the yorshim of this husband or that husband are yorish or ktubah. There is no ktubah. Ktubah mayavirata, there is no ktubah there. Now, papa ktubat barin dichrin, just one brief explanation. Ktubat barin dichrin is mentioned in the fourth parak of ktubot in the Mishnah. And talks about a piece that the wife that can be stipulated, that is that the wife's sons that she has with this husband will inherit her ktubah in addition to the regular inheritance they get. So, for instance, if a woman marries into a family and she has, let's say, a large ktubah, she's from an important family and she has a large ktubah. And the husband already has three sons, and then she has another two sons with this husband. So the Yerusha is going to be divided five ways. What the Ketubah Banin Dichrin stipulates is that the Yerusha is divided five ways besides her Ketubah. And then her Ketubah is divided among her two sons. That's called Ketubah Banin Dichrin. And that's what we're saying here. So Pshita, obviously, if there is no Ketubah, so why would Ketubah Banin Dichrin be different? Pshita mahu tema ledida da avda isura kansura bana. Now we might think that only she who violated the law is fined. Lazara lo kansura bana, but maybe her children shouldn't be fined, and we should still take the value of the ktubah and give it only to her sons and not to the other sons. Kamash malan that the entire marriage is invalidated. All the ktubah is invalidated, including ktubah banim dichrin. Now, so he said that the brothers of either one of this husbands who die without children give chalitza not yibum. Now, we just go through all four possibilities. The brothers of the first guy, who really is her husband, have to give chalitza. That's doraita. Have to give chalitza. And the rule that they cannot do yibum is a rule. It's drabanan. Echav shel sheni cholitz midrabanan. The brothers of the second husband, who's not really a husband at all, have to give chalitza. That's only drabanan because we don't want anyone to get the impression that you can be putter from yibum without chalitza. After all, this guy died and he had the appearances of being her husband, just like we said he needs to give a get. The fact that he doesn't give yibum is because it has no basis whatsoever. There'd be no reason for him to do yibum on this woman. She simply was the fake wife of his dead brother, not a real wife. Good. Now, in the latter part of the Mishnah, we had Rabbi Yossi, who said that she does have a ketubah, and the ketubah comes from the first husband. Then we had Rabbi Elazar, who perhaps added on to that and said that the first husband does get the metziah and masiyah daim. And then we had Rabbi Shimon, who says that the brothers of the first husband could even do bia, and that would put to the tzara, that would be 100% positive yibum. So now, now, Amar Rav Huna, Machlok Adam or Ra'im, how to read the sequencing of the Mishnah. Batroi modu le kamoi, kamoi le modu bala batroi. Batroi here does not mean later or earlier in time, because Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yossi were contemporaries, Rabbi Elazar was two generations earlier. But what it means is later or earlier in this Mishnah. So it goes Rabbi Yossi, then Rabbi Elazar, and then Rabbi Shimon. Batroi modu le kamoi, kamoi le modu le batroi. That means the later ones agreed with the earlier ones, which means whatever the earlier ones said, the later one accepted and then added more. And the earlier ones did not accept what the later ones said, meaning that the earlier ones were limited and the later ones were accepting theirs and adding. Meaning as follows. Rabbi Shimon, who's at the end of the list, modu le Rabbi Elazar, he accepts Rabbi Elazar, who said that she gets maaseh adayim. And here it goes as follows. Dema bia de ikri sura lo kanis. After all, he does not put a knas in the way of bia, meaning if one of the brothers has bia with her, that's considered a valid yibum, The ikrusu lo kones is not kones. So kol shekem mitziatam aseyadah the mamona who so certainly is not going to be kones in the case of mamon. For Belozer lo modi lo Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Elazar does not accept Rabbi Shimon. Mitziatam aseyadah the mamona who lo kones. Right? He says in the case of mamon out of abia the yisura who kones. So we just flip it backwards. Tavayu modi lo Rabbi Elazar. Both of them, of course, the Rabbi Yosi except Rabbi Yosi. Because hani diyatva tute lo kanis, because they say that after all, if the things that happen while she's married to him were not going to be kones, in other words, things that are part of the normal marital relationship, and we're going to allow them to continue, v'choshken ktubah demishkol mefakai, and certainly we will not kones her to lose her ktubah, which is there to get her out of the marriage and to move on. For Rabbi Yosi lo modilu, Rabbi Yosi doesn't agree. Ktubah demishkol mefakai lo kanis, avalhani diyatva tute kanis. Rabbi Yosi will say, she should get the ktubah from the first husband, who really is her real husband, but these other things which engender continuing the relationship, that we're not going to allow her to have, that will be the kenas. That's Rav Huna. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, the opposite. Rabbi Yochanan says, kamoi modula batroi, the earlier ones, except what the later ones say, batroi lo modula kamoi, meaning that the first opinion accepts really all of them. The second opinion limits, and then the third opinion limits even more. Now let's see how it goes. Rabbi Yossi, who is first, modile the Rabbi Elazar, he accepts Rabbi Elazar. He says, Ktuba de mi didei le dida lo kones, Ktuba, which is coming from him to her. She's the one who did the wrong thing here. They're not going to kones. Kol shekem mitziatam aseyadah de mi didei le didei. He's just, Rabbi Yochanan is typically looking at a different aspect of the difference between Ktuba and mitziah. On the one hand, Ktuba, as Rav Huna saw, is about her leaving, so there's more reason to give that to her. On the other hand, Ktuba is something that he's paying her, so there's less reason to give it to her. So if Rabbi Yossi says that we give her the Ktuba, certainly he'll agree that you give that she has to give in her Maaseh Adayim. Rolazin lo modilei, because he says, Mitziatam Maaseh Adah, hu demi didei le didah akonis, ha Ktuba demi didei le didah akonis. Good. Tavayim modilei Rav Shimon. And both Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Elazar accept Rabbi Shimon. He says, "Uma hani de mechayim lo kansi," because after all, if we're not going to be kones, maaseh adayim and the ketubah, which happen while he's alive, bia de lachar mita l'kol shekein bia, which happens after he's dead, it's a question of the brother having bia with her. Certainly, there won't be kones. Rabbi Shimon lo modil. Rabbi Shimon does not accept it. He says the only thing that happens is yibum. After all, that's after the husband's dead, so okay, good. Me, remember, technically she's married only to the first husband. So therefore, once the husband's dead, there's nothing else for us to do, so therefore she will be considered proper for Yibum. But other things that happen while he's alive, like Maaseh Adayim and like Ktubah, good. So we really have two different ways to look at the sequence. From one perspective, the sequence continues to grow, and therefore the earlier Tana has a limited acceptance of the first marriage, and it grows to a nearly full acceptance of the first marriage. And the other way to look at it is that the first Tana has a nearly full acceptance, and it continues to be limited until Rabbi Shimon, who's last, has a much more limited thing, and that's because we can look at the difference between Ktubah, and then Maaseh Adayim, and then Yibum, from the perspective of the intensity of the act, in which case, the Yibum is the most intense, and therefore, that's something that indicates that he certainly would accept the earlier things, or you can look at them from perspective of their impact, which is that if Ktubah, which is something that he pays her, then certainly she should pay him, and then certainly things that happen after he's dead, which is Yibum. All right, good. Nisei Shelo Birshut. All right. The end of that Mishnah said, and it seemed to be Rabbi Shimon's words, said that if she married Shelo Birshut, which sounds, it's very misleading, because it makes it sound like she did something very wrong, but Lahefach, it means she got married without the Rishut of Beit Din, meaning there was no need for Rishut Beit Din, because instead of one witness coming, there were two witnesses who came and said they saw the husband die. She married in those circumstances. Then the Mishnah at the end said, Lo Tetzei. She doesn't have to leave her first husband. Their husband shows up. She leaves the second husband. It was a mistake. She's Onas. She's Anusa. And she goes back to her first husband. Is that Rabbi Shimon's words, or is that a consensus? We'll see. Amar Rav Huna, Amar Rav, Hachi Hilchata. So Rav said, that's the halacha. So Amar Rav Nachman, Ganva Gnuvi Lamalach. Why are you trying to sneak this word in? Yisper halach Rabbi Shimon, ema halach Rabbi Shimon. If you hold that halach is like Rabbi Shimon, so say halach is like Rabbi Shimon, because these words are Rabbi Shimon's. The Shmatich Rabbanan, Rabbi Shimon Azlak, because saying that, you're supporting Rabbi Shimon. Chitema Yamin halach Rabbi Shimon, and if you're concerned, Rav, that by saying halach Rabbi Shimon mashma filu b'kamaita, that might, would mean that you even pass like Rabbi Shimon in his earlier statement about Yibum, and you don't want that to be the impression, so em halach Rabbi Shimon b'achrona. So why don't you say halach is like Rabbi Shimon in the last thing he said, which is that if she married based on Shnei Edim, she doesn't have to leave. So the answer is Kasha. You're right, Rav should have said it that way. Now, that's Rav Nachman's approach. Rav Shesha disagrees and says, no, the end of the Mishnah is not only Rabbi Shimon, it's everybody. I'm Rav Sheshet Amina, Kinaim Shachiv Rav Amra Lahashmata. But notice, Rav Sheshet doesn't say it as a challenge to Rav Nachman, he says it as a challenge to Rav. He says, Amina, I thought, Kinaim Shachiv, when Rav was sleeping and nodding off, Amra Lahashmata. He must have said this thing, that Halacha Rav Shimon when he was sleeping, why, or dozing. Because halacha michlal de pliga. Whenever you say halacha Rav Shimon, that means there must be somebody who disputes it, and you're ruling like one over the other. So michlal de pliga, I have ilal mi'avad. But how could anybody disagree and say that if she married based on two witnesses and then her husband showed up, she can't go back to her first husband? How could anybody say not? My have ilal mi'avad. Now remember that phrase is going to come back in a little bit. What could she have done? In other words, when there was one witness and we knew that it was a sort of a shoestring kind of thing, she should have done much better checking. But when two witnesses come and say, here's we know your husband, here's what he looks like, we saw him dead, and she remarried, what do you expect her to do? She can't wait around forever to find out. She married. So, Miana Sansa. The odd time. Now, besides that, we have a braita. The braita is unattributed. Kol arayot sheba Torah in srichot imenu get. What that means is that if a man marries somebody who's an erva to, a woman marries somebody who's an erva to her, then she doesn't need a get. We'll have to see what that means. Chutz me'eshet ish she'niseit al pi beitin. The one exception is if an eshet ish who marries based on the beitin's instructions, like our case, where a woman is told by the beitin that based on this, your husband is dead and you can remarry, and in that case, she doesn't need a get from the second guy. The second guy that she married, even though she was not really married to him. Now, our diuk is alpi beitin hu debayagita. It's only if she married based on the beitin that she needs to get alpi edim lebayagita. But if she married the second guy based on edim, it was without the reshut beitin, based on two edim, then when her husband shows up, she doesn't need to get from the second husband because it's a nothing. So now, mani, who could be the author of that braita? Elam Rabbi Shimon. You can't say it's Rabbi Shimon. Because Alpi Beitin me by a get, because according to him, you don't even need a get if it was Alpi Beitin. Why? Vatanya Rabbi Shimon Omer, here Rabbi Shimon explicitly speaks up. Asu Beitin Bahora Atan Gizdon Ish Bisha. That what they did is they said, if the Beitin instructs her to marry, and it turns out the guy shows up, then they equated it to what sounds like intentional adultery. Of course, in the case of intentional adultery, the woman doesn't need a get from the adulterer. Alpi edim kishkagad ish b'isha. And if it's based on two edim, then we consider it as if there was some mistake. She was sleeping somewhere, and some by mistake they slept together. It wasn't intentional. In other words, they equated it that way. Meaning, edim edilo by a get. And certainly, in neither one of those cases would you need a get. So Rabbi Shimon seems to be saying, and here it's Rabbi Shimon explicitly, Rabbi Shimon seems to be saying, in neither case would you need a get, which means the braita that we just saw that did not have a name on it, that said that the only time you need a get from the second husband that was an erva to you, where kiddushin really aren't tofes, but midarbanan you need a get, is when you married based on alpi beitin. And even there they said, but if it's based on shnei edim, you don't need a get. So you see that even rabbanan agree that my havi lele mi'avad, right? Elav rabbanan he. So it must be that braita is rabbanan. And therefore, even Rabbanon agree. So, Li'olam, Rabbi Shimon, he. No, we'll say that bright is Rabbi Shimon. Atari Tachi. We have to read Rabbi Shimon's bright to different. Rabbi Shimon said, Amer, Asu Beitin Baratan Kechavanat Ish B'isha. Meaning that the Rabbanon equated a case where a woman marries based on Rashut Beitin and the husband shows up like an intentional Bia. Meaning, like a man who had Bia with a single woman. B'chavanat kiddushin, and therefore the kiddushin are valid via get, and then you do need a get. Al pi'edim shelo b'chavanat ish v'isha, v'lo by a get. And if it was based on Edim, then they equated it to a situation where a person just had Bio without any intent, and therefore there's no need for a get in such a case. That's one way to answer the Braita and say the Braita is authored by Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says you do need a get in the case of Horat Beitin, and we explain his words differently. Rav Ashi says, no, what Rabbi Shimon meant was something different. This still supports the fix that we just had. Nini Surik Tani, he said that this is not as far as the ramifications and consequences of the need of a get, but rather the Isur. Rachi Kamar Asu Beitin Baratan Kizdon Ish Bisha Umitzar Al Bala. Remember, if a woman intentionally has adultery, then she's usher to her husband forever. So they said, if she married based on Horat Beitin, then they equated that to intentional adultery, not as far as the need for a get, but as far as the isur to her husband. But if it was done based on Edim, then they equated it to unintentional, and she's not usher to her husband, if an unintentional thing happened. Ravina Marlinian Korban Tana. Ravina says that bright Rabbi Shimon is really the Selagabe Korban. Asu Beitin Baratan Kizdon Ish Bisham Velo Matya Korban. This kind of flips things around. Because remember, intentional adultery, there is no Korban. No Korban Mamezid. Al Pi Edim, but if it was based on Edim, Kishkagat Ish Bisham Matya Korban. Then it's like a Shkaga, and then indeed you do bring a Korban, and that it does substantiate what we saw in Mishnah Bet, that the difference between getting married Al Pi Beitin and Shal Al Pi Beitin is Al Pi Beitin, you're part of from the Korban. There's another way to answer it, is Hakamaita Rabbananhi, that the first statement really is Rabbanan, the one that says that you never need a get from an erva except in the case of Alpi Beitin, but Vitari Tachi, Chutz Meshet Ish Vishin Niseit Alpi Beitin. In other words, it's not one case, Eshet Ish Niseit Alpi Beitin, but it's two different cases. Either an Eshet Ish in any case, whether it's based on Shnei Edim or Alpi Beitin, plus Niseit Alpi Beitin. Good, so now that all explains that what Rav's statement is actually an accurate statement, and means that the statement at the end of the first Mishnah that says, Veshiniseit Shelo Bershut Lo Tzich Muter Lechzor Rishon, is really only Rabbi Shimon, and when Rav said Halacha, like that, he really meant to say Halacha Rabbi Shimon, and should have said Halacha Rabbi Shimon. And there are those who disagree, the Rabbanan disagree. And we've seen several ways to answer both the unattributed Braita about Eshet Ishel and Zabetin, and Rabbi Shimon's Braita about Asu Alpi Beitin and Asu Alpi Edim, and we explain it differently. But now, earlier on, the argument was used by Rav Sheshet. Rav Sheshet used an argument to say, everybody must agree that if she married based on Shnei Edim, she can go back to her husband because she's Anusa, Mai Havilah Me'avad. So Meiti Vula, Ula challenges that and says, Mi Amrin and Mai Havilah Me'avad, since when is that an argument to say, what do you want her to do? There's nothing she could have done, therefore she's Pater, and therefore she can go back. We're giving several challenges. V'hatnan, mission number one. Katav L'shem Machut She'ena Hogena. Let's say that you wrote a get, and in the get you wrote this and this year of this particular king. And it's a king who's not a real king. L'shem Machut Madai, L'shem Machut Yavan, L'vinyan Habayit, L'churban Habayit. And you wrote it to something which is not recognized as an accurate thing. It should be to the local king, meaning the year, because the get needs a year on it besides the day and the zman. It needs within the zman, it needs the year. So if you counted the year from something besides Shnat Shtarot or Shnat HaMelech, whatever the convention is, then it's an invalid get. Hayav Mizrach Chatav Marav, Marav Chatav Mizrach, he wrote the wrong town on it. Then, and she married another guy, and then they found out that the get was like that. Teitzei Mizeh Mizeh, she has to leave her second husband and cannot go back to the first husband. V'chol Adrochim Ha'iluva, and all the other things that we mentioned in our Mishnah about Perot and Blaot and Ketubah, etc., all apply to her. Right, Vamai, why? Lema Mahavilal Me'avad, why don't we just say, what do you want her to do? After all, she was told it was a good get. She married a second guy, and then we suddenly figured out that it was a wrong get. The answer is, therefore, there, you know, you're going to get remarried. First of all, take a very good look at the get and make sure somebody who knows what they're doing checks it out before you move ahead and get married. In other words, that's something that she could have acted on, as opposed to here, where two Edim came and said, your husband over on the other side of the world died, and we saw him die. What do you want her to do? But here, she has the get. She could have checked it out. Shimbarashi Toshma, so he has another challenge. Hakonis Yivimto. a man marries a Yavama, and after he brought married a Yavama, that Sarah goes and marries some other guy, because she's free now. And then it turns out that the Yavama was an Ilanit, which means that the Yavama is no good, therefore the Ptur is no good, and that Sarah is now married out incorrectly. That Sarah cannot go back to the Yavama, but she also has to leave the husband she married. And all the other things that we said apply. Vamai, Nemamai Havilamavid, same thing. Why don't we say, what do you want her to do? After all, the Yavama married. So the answer is, she should have waited. Evidently, there's a certain amount of time to wait to make sure that the Yibum was a proper Yibum. She should have waited. She shouldn't jumped right ahead. And she lost. In other words, every one of these cases, somebody's taking a chance. You marry based on a get, and you haven't checked it out thoroughly, or you marry based on the fact that your co-wife did Yibum, and you're not sure that it's a real valid Yibum. You're taking a chance, and if you didn't do the proper thing, either check it out properly or wait a little bit, then you have a good chance of losing in a very serious way. Rabbiya Toshma, third challenge. Kol Arayot Shamru Potrot Sarotayan, the whole list in the first parak. The first mission in the Masachet that lists all of the zareyot that pater the co-wives. Hachut zarot v'nisus. Let's say that three wives fall to a man. One of them happens to be his daughter, right? His brother married his niece, which is his own daughter. Three of them fall. So what happens, of course, is they're all pater. So one of the tzarot goes and gets married. Then it turns out his daughter is an ilonit, which means she doesn't count in the configuration. And the tzarot now are zukukot. She can't go back to the yavam, but she also can't stay with her husband. Again, peirot, plaot, mezonot, etc. Vamai? Why? Why don't we say this notion that what should she have done? The answer is, again, she should have waited to make sure that the yibum, or the ptur, was a proper ptur. Amarava Toshma, Katav Sofer Get Leish Veshovar Leisha. Let's say the Sofer wrote a get for the man to give the woman, and a receipt for the woman to give the man that she got her ktubah. V'tavanatam Get Leisha Veshovar Leish. And he mistakenly gave the wrong paper to the wrong person. V'natnu Zelazev Lezelazen. Then they did a whole formal thing, and they gave papers without looking at what they said, and they gave the wrong papers to each other, which means he's not divorced. The receipt's not valid, etc. The main thing, of course, she's not divorced. She goes and remarries and marries somebody else. And now the man takes a look, and he sees that he's got the get in his hand. And the woman still got her receipt, which means she's not divorced, and she was married to somebody else, she had kids, etc. She can't go back to her husband. She has to leave her present husband, who's not really a husband because she was an Eshadish. Because if I'm Zerim, there's no Mazonot, bloat, etc., etc., all these things apply. For my name and my Havi Lamiavad, this is, of course, the same answer. By La Kuri Gita, she should have read the get. Here it's very simple. She doesn't have to be an expert in Gitin. She has to take a look and see that it's really a get. She has another receipt. Rashi Toshma, the fifth and final challenge. Shina Shma Ushma. Let's say that his name was spelled incorrectly, had the wrong name, or her name. Shem Irova, Shem Ira, their city names were wrong. Tetzemi Zomizah, again. The get is no good. But my name of my Havi Lamiava, again, say the same thing. What do you want her to do? The answer is, Yibayla Kuri Gita. She should have read the get. Amar Ravina. And everybody is throwing in their own example, but it's essentially the same thing, is that every time that we argue that the claim of, well, what do you want her to do, meaning when it's out of her control and she had every reason to think she was doing the right thing, we shouldn't fine her and we should consider an onus and allow her to go back to her first husband, and we say we don't. In every one of these cases, we said, you know what, there is more that she could have done. And she really did not act with the greatest circumspection and caution, and therefore she does lose. So Ravina then brings, and I apologize, this is the last example, Toshma, Kinsa beget kereach, Tetzemizem izeh. So get kereach, where there's the line on the bottom is missing, so there's room to add things in, right? Tetzemizem izeh. Again, same thing, by the Kuri Gita, and again, the answer is you should have read the get. Good. So now, we had six challenges, two about Yibum, four about get, in which a woman who retrospectively or retroactively turns out to be not a free woman and was married to somebody, has to leave him, and we don't say that she can go back to her first husband because, after all, what do you want her to have done? Which were all challenges to the notion that what would we want her to have done was not a valid excuse, says it is a valid excuse when there's really nothing she could have done, like in our case when two witnesses showed up. But in a case where there's something she could have done, like waited a little bit longer or read the get more carefully, brought it to an expert, then she really is fined. Now, Rav Papa suffered lemiavad uvda b'mayhavi lemiavad. Rav Papa wanted to actually rule based on the reasoning of mayhavi lemiavad, evidently, and allow a woman to go back to her husband when two witnesses came. Amar Rav Huna b'rei Rav Yeshua Rav Papa, so his chaver said to him, v'hatanya kohanim at night, we have all these brightot and mishnayot that seemed to indicate that mayhavi lemiavad is not a good answer, is not a good argument. V'havalav shaninu, but Rav Papa said, didn't we answer them all? Didn't we explain in every one of those cases there she really had something she could have done? It was in her control, but here it wasn't. What? And so Rav Huna Rav Yeshua said to Rav Papa, and you want to rely on all those answers? Those answers were simply saying that it's not conclusive, but still, that seems to be the mainstream approach. Upasak, and indeed, according to some Girsot, Rav Papa did not rule and stopped at that point, and accepted the fact that we do not accept mayhavi lemiavad as a valid excuse, as we see from those brightot. Am Ravashi, ulakol hashinu. It's a separate issue. Ravashi says we are not choshesh for a kol, meaning if a woman gets married based on horat beitin, that her husband's dead, and afterwards there's rumors the husband's circulating somewhere and we heard he was alive, we're not choshesh, we don't raise any hue and cry, nothing. Hey caller, what's the call? Elam a call debat nisuin. If it's a call that happened after she got married, Amar Rav Ashi chalazimna. Rav Ashi already said that. Amar Rav Ashi call debat nisuin lo chashina. We're never choshesh for a call after she already got married. Rumors before she got married, we'll look into it. After she got married, we'd shut the rumors up, right? So ma'ud etay mahoyel va'atoy levedina sharin v'sharinan. We might think that after all, if the husband would actually show up, then in the Beit Din. Sorry, since the very fact that she has to come to the Beit Din, Hoil Uvatoy Levedin of Asharin, and since she has to come to the Beit Din for a heter after she's a married woman, her husband went on a trip. 3 months later, one guy comes and says that he saw her dead, and she has to go to the Beit Din, have the Beit Din go through the procedure, question the witness, etc., see how much of the body he saw. We'll see this later on in the Masechet. And she needs that hat there, so kakola the kamin nisuin dami vititsar. Therefore, maybe we will argue that the kol that comes out that the husband is alive should be then thrown back into the original case and be considered something that happened before nisuin, because obviously she didn't get married before she went to the Beit Din the first time to have her marriage declared, her husband declared dead. Kamash Palan, therefore, Ravashi says, once she gets married and we start hearing rumors the husband's alive, we don't pay any attention to it. Until the guy actually walks up and says, here I am, and people can testify who he is, nothing is done. Good. Now, in the second Mishnah, it said, Niseit al pi Beit Din, teitse mizel mizeh. If she gets married based on the Beit Din, she has to leave both husbands, which she puts him in a korban. Now, Amar Zairi, leitidam nitim netanim bevin drasha, that we do not accept this Mishnah. Meaning, we do not accept the Mishnah that says she's puts him in a korban, because we learned in the base medrash, Tetanim bevin drasha, horu Beit Din sheshak achama, let's say the Beit Din paskin, that the sun has set. It's Shabbat. And they say that the sun has set, and they tell people you can do malacha. Ulevasof zacha. And then, a few minutes later, the clouds clear, and turns out the sun is out, and people did malacha. Einzu horay alatot. That is not horat Beit Din. And what's the difference? This I didn't put on the sheet, but the difference between horat Beit Din and ta'ut is as follows. If Beit Din is mora hara, meaning they give an instruction, which is based on whatever information they have in front of them and based on their own reading of the text, and it turns out that their interpretation was incorrect, then that's, and people act based on that, then they have to bring a par helam dover shel tzibur, which is one korban for the tzibur. If, on the other hand, Beit Din issued an incorrect ruling based on bad info, bad data, that's called a ta'ut, and in the case of a ta'ut, everybody has to bring a korban, as they did a chatat, because they thought this thing was kosher, it turns out it was treif. Right? That's what Zairi. So Zairi says that in the case in our Mishnah, if Beit Din ruled based on this one witness that the husband was dead, and then the husband walks up, that's not called hora, that's called ta'ut, and therefore she is chayv korban. Nachman amar hora, Nachman disagrees and says it's hora, and she's potzim in a korban, like our Mishnah. Now he's going to argue it. I'll prove to you it's hora. Why? After all, anywhere else in the Torah, we don't accept one witness. And here we believe one witness, my taima, because what it is that this witness is not giving us the data, this witness is giving us sort of background, and the Beit Din is then issuing a hora based on the technical read of the halacha, which is that based on what we say about Eid HaChadim Yisurin, and based on all of the chishuvim that we saw at the beginning of the parak, they rule that this woman is allowed to marry. They're not ruling about reality, they're ruling about halacha. And the only problem is when the husband walks up, he can't say that anymore. So he says, therefore, we know that it is hora'ah. Amar Rava, teda the tout. Rava supports the Yerid. He says, you know, you should know it's a tout. Why? Tilaru Beit Din Mechelu V'dam LaHetera. Let's say that Beit Din said, this chelav really is mutter. And then they argued, turned around, and said, no, based on the majority, based on the chazaka, based on whatever it is, not because the reality has changed, and not because new data has come to light, but because based on a new argument within the Beit Midrash, they say, oh, no, it's really asur. Then when they turn around and say, no, you know what, a third argument has come up, and now we say it's mutter, we don't pay attention to them, and we consider that it's still asur. Right, which means that we regard as being a hora, right? But here, when one witness comes and says he's dead, we say she's mutter, she can marry. Atu tre, two more guys come and say we saw him alive, we say she's osur. Then when another witness comes and says, no, I was there and I saw him die also, sharin la, then we're mater her. In other words, Rava says, in the case of a hora, we don't go back and forth. We say that once Beit Din issues the hora leheter based on reasoning, and then they say, no, you know what, we didn't do the full reasoning. Based on another way of looking at it, another logical argument, we're now osir it. That's where we stick with it. Nothing else is going to change it because that's how hora works. But here, when you have one witness come and say he's dead, she says, okay, you could marry. Then two more witnesses come and say, let's make it easy, she didn't marry yet. Two witnesses come and say, no, we saw him alive, and here he is, and we know him. Then she can't marry anymore. Then one more witness comes and says, no, I saw him dead. That witness joins with the other witness, and suddenly she's mutter again. And there we say it's okay, which means it bounces back and forth. So therefore, Rava says, we have to judge it as ta'ud, not as hora. Good. The great Rabbi Eliezer holds that when Beit Din paskens based on one person, that the husband's dead, and then the husband walks up, that's called a ta'ut, and she has to bring a korban. Tanur Eliezer Omer, Yikova Dina Tahar V'Tavi Chatat Shmina. If a woman, in this case, a woman marries based on the Beit Din telling her, based on one witness, and then the husband shows up, say Yikova Dina Tahar, which means the law strikes straight through the mountain. In other words, there's no funny business, and the law does not distinguish between cases, and she has to bring a korban. So if you agree that it's a tout, mishum hachim may be korban, that's why she has to bring a korban, matzah korban. Am I matzah korban? But if you say it's hora, why should you have to bring a korban? The Beit Din has to bring a korban for misteaching. Maybe Rabbi Elazar holds this is machlok and masachet orayot. And if an individual acts based on horad Beit Din, just one individual, he's chayav. But if that's the case, in Kain, my Yikova Dina Tahar, then there's no Yikova Dina Tahar here. Then it's just simply a case that's the halacha, right? So therefore, since he says that he uses the phrase Yikova Dina Tahar, therefore, since Rabbi Elazar used the phrase Yikova Dina Tahar, therefore, we see that he regards this as being a ta'ut, and too bad. And just to add one last point to that, as Rashi points out, the Yikov HaDin HaTahar, the way Rashi reads it at least, means that when we look in depth at the issue here, then the result is that she's chayav. So it must be the sort of thing that when we look at it in a superficial manner, it would seem that she would not bring the korban. So it can't be that Rabbi Elazar holds the position that if an individual does it based on Horat Beit Din, that there are chayiv in the korban, because then there's nothing deep to look at. So it must be that he holds that it really is ta'ut, but it's something, of course, that you have to look at deeply, which means, by the way, we're rejecting the second Mishnah. But the end of the Mishnah said something kind of curious. Horuha Beit Din Linasei. The Mishnah said that if Beit Din said, based on this testimony, you can marry, and then instead she went and kilkala. Which means she had relations that were not proper relations. We'll clarify what that means in a minute. It's machloket. Then the husband shows up, then she is chayav korban. Now, of course, this is all moot because we said in any case she's chayav korban because it's ta'ut. But nonetheless, within the context of the Mishnah, that's the distinction, that if she did it based on Harat Beit Din and she married a second guy and then her husband shows up, she has to divorce him, but she's part of a korban and so is the fellow. If she did it based on without Beit Din, then she's chayv in the korban. That's the greatness of Beit Din. But if Beit Din issued a permit for her to marry and instead she was kilkala and then the husband shows up, she's chayv b'korban. Now my kilkala, what is kilkala? Rabbi Eliezer married zinta. It means she has relations without marriage. Rabbi Yochanan married Manol Kanegor Gushav Chotzal Kanhedion. It means that she married, but she married in an asur marriage, right? Amanda marzinta sokoshkan amanu lekohen gadol. So Rav Elazar, who says that kilkala means zinta, he certainly would apply it to a marriage which itself is illegal. So if they issue a decree that this woman's husband is ill, make it simple. That means she's an almana, and then she goes and marries a kohen gadol. Let's make it easy. Let's say she was an almana beforehand, that she married this other ben yisrael or regular kohen, and he went off, and they ruled based on one witness that he was dead, and then she married a kohen gadol, which itself is usher. So first of all, she gets makot for that, but then when the husband shows up, she's chayiv b'korban for niyuf, because Beit Din never permitted her to marry somebody she's not allowed to marry. Aval zin talo, but Rabbi Yochanan would say, but mandamar amalekun gadol vazin talo. Why time? Tamra atun huda shavitin pnuya, because she could turn around to the Beit Din and say, hey, you called me a single girl. I'm a single girl. If I sleep with somebody, there's no korban involved. It might not be nice, but it's not. There's no korban involved. So there's no isser, inherent isser in that. Now, Tanakh tend to come to Rabbi Yochanan. We have a brayta that supports Rabbi Yochanan, who says it's only if she marries and enters into an illicit marriage. So we have a brayta that supports Rabbi Yochanan, that the Tana Rabbi Elazar says that if she, the Rabbi Elazar earlier in our sugya is the Amora Rabbi Elazar in Tveria, but the Tana Rabbi Elazar says that if she went ahead and married, let's say, as a grusha, she married a kohen, then she was now chayv a korban for every bia she has. Chachamim korban achad al hakol. Chachamim agree that she's chayv a korban, but one korban for the relationship. Umodim chachamim Rabbi Elazar, but they agree. Shemnisa v'chamisha bnei adam. Let's say she married five different men, and evidently all of them are problematic. Let's say five different kohanim. Shechayev korban al kol achad ve'achad. She's chayev for each one. Why? Chayev v'gufin mukhlakim, because each one is a separate person. She's chayev a korban for each relationship that's not okay. But that is all based on the argument that when Beit Din issued the heter, based on one witness, that they issued the heter for her to marry properly, not to marry somebody that's also to marry. So when she marries as a grusha, she marries a kohen, and then let's say that kohen dies and she marries another kohen, and as a grusha, and then when her husband shows up, she's chayiv for each one of those relationships, according to Chachamim, according to Rabbi Elazar, for each one of those biot, a korban, even though she would be, in the context of the Mishnah, potter from the korban if she'd married a regular guy properly. She'd have to divorce her husband, her new husband, and couldn't go back to the old one, but she would not be chayiv b'korban. Of course, again, it's all moot, because we rule that it's a ta'ut, and as a ta'ut, she's chayiv b'korban in any case. So, Baruch Hashem, we have gotten to the Mishnah on Daf Tzadi Bet Amud Aleph, and the next podcast is going to be relatively long, because we're going to go to the Mishnah on Tzadi Dalet Amud Aleph. In the meantime, everyone should have a wonderful day.